Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
As it happens, President Obama is holding a news conference right now, and he's answering a question about this issue. Let's go live.
But we remain one nation. And, you know, as somebody who, you know, relies heavily on my Christian faith in my job, I understand, you know, the passions that religious faith can raise. But I'm also respectful that people of different faiths can practice their religion, even if they don't subscribe to the exact same notions that I do, and that they are still good people, and they are my neighbors, and they are my friends, and they are fighting alongside us in our battles. I want to make sure that this country retains that sense of purpose. And I think tomorrow is a wonderful day for us to remind ourselves of that. Okay. Natasha Mazgovaya, we're of Haaretz. Is she here? Natasha, there you are back there.
Mr. President, back in region, the Palestinian and Israeli leaders, they sound a bit less ready for this historic compromise. President Abbas, for example, said the Palestinians won't recognize Israel as a Jewish state. The question is, if these talks fail at an early stage, will this administration disengage, or maybe you're ready to step up and deepen your personal involvement?
President Abbas and Prime Minister Netanyahu were here last week, and they came with a sense of purpose and seriousness and cordiality that, frankly, exceeded a lot of people's expectations. What they said was that they were serious about negotiating. They affirmed the goal of creating two states living side by side in peace and security. They have set up a schedule where they're going to meet every 2 weeks. We are actively participating in that process. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton will be flying to the Middle East the first series of next meetings on September 14th and 15th. And so what we've done is to bring the parties together, to try to get them to recognize that the path for Israeli security and Palestinian sovereignty can only be met through negotiations. And these are going to be tough negotiations. There are enormous hurdles between now and our endpoint. And there are going to be a whole bunch of folks in the region who want to undermine these negotiations. We saw it when Hamas carried out these horrific attacks against civilians and explicitly said, we're going to try to do this to undermine peace talks. There are going to be rejectionists who suggest that it can't happen, and there are also going to be cynics who just believe that the mistrust between the sides is too deep. We understood all that. We understood that it was a risk for us to promote these discussions. But it is a risk worth taking, because I firmly believe that, you know, it is in America's national security interests, as well as Israel's national security interests, as well as in the interests of the Palestinian people, to arrive at a peace deal. Part of the reason that I think Prime Minister Netanyahu was comfortable coming here was that he's seen during the course of 18 months that my administration is unequivocal in our defense of Israel's security. And we've engaged in some unprecedented cooperation with Israel to make sure that they can deal with any external threats. But I think he also came here understanding that to maintain Israel as a Jewish state that is also a democratic state, this issue has to be dealt with. I think President Abbas came here despite great misgivings and pressure from the other side because he understood the window for creating a Palestinian state is closing. And there are a whole bunch of parties in the region who purport to be friends of the Palestinians and yet do everything they can to avoid the path that would actually lead to a Palestinian state, would actually lead to their goal. And so the two parties need each other. That doesn't mean it's going to work. Ultimately, it's going to be up to them. We can facilitate. We can encourage. We can tell them that we will stand behind them in their efforts and are willing to contribute as part of the broader international community in making this work. But ultimately, the parties have to make these decisions for themselves. I remain hopeful, but this is going to be tough. And I don't want anybody out there thinking that it's going to be easy. The main point I want to make is it's a risk worth taking because the alternative is a status quo that is unsustainable. And so if these talks break down, we're going to keep on trying. Over the long term, it has the opportunity, by the way, also to change the strategic landscape in the Middle East in a way that would be very helpful. It would help us deal with an Iran that has not been willing to give up its nuclear program. It would help us deal with terrorist organizations in the region. So this is something in our interests. We're not just doing this to feel good. We're doing it because it'll help secure America as well. Jake Tapper.
Thank you, Mr. President. A couple questions. First, were you concerned at all when the administration had Secretary of Defense Gates call this pastor in Florida that you were elevating somebody who is clearly from the fringe? And then, more substantively, on health care reform, this is 6 months since health care passed, you pledged A, that you would bend the cost curve, and B, that Democrats would be able to campaign on this. And CMS reported yesterday that the cost curve is actually bending up from 6.1% to 6.3% post-healthcare legislation. And the only Democrats I've seen talking about healthcare legislation are running TV ads saying that they voted against it. Thank you.
With respect to the individual down in Florida, let me repeat what I said a couple of days ago. The idea that we would burn the sacred texts of someone else's religion is contrary to what this country stands for. It's contrary to what this nation was founded on. My hope is that this individual preys on it and refrains from doing it. But I'm also commander in chief, and we are seeing today riots in Kabul, riots in Afghanistan that threaten our young men and women in uniform. And so we've got an obligation to send a very clear message that this kind of behavior or threats of action put our young men and women in harm's way. And it's also the best imaginable recruiting tool for al-Qaeda. And although this may be one individual in Florida, part of my concern is to make sure that we don't start having a whole bunch of folks all across the country think this is the way to get attention. This is a way of endangering our troops, our sons and daughters. Fathers and mothers, husbands and wives who are sacrificing for us to keep us safe. And you don't play games with that. I hardly think we're the ones who elevated this story, but it is in the age of the internet something that can cause us profound damage around the world, and so we've got to take it seriously. With respect to health care, what I said during the debate is the same thing I'm saying now, and it's the same thing I will say 3 or 4 years from now. Bending the cost curve on healthcare is hard to do. We've got hundreds of thousands of providers and doctors and systems and insurers. And what we did was we took every idea out there about how to reduce or at least slow the costs of healthcare over time. But I said at the time, it wasn't going to happen tomorrow. It wasn't going to happen next year. It took us decades to get into a position where our healthcare costs were going up 6, 7, 10% a year. And so our goal is to slowly bring down those costs. Now, we've done so also by making sure that 31 million people who aren't getting health insurance are going to start getting it. And we have now implemented the first phase of healthcare in a way that, by the way, has been complimented even by the opponents of healthcare reform. It has been smooth. And right now, middle-class families all across America are going to be able to say to themselves, starting this month, you know, if I've got a kid who is under 26 and doesn't have health insurance, that kid can stay on my health insurance. If I've got a child with a pre-existing condition, an insurer can't deny me coverage. If I get sick and I've got health insurance, that insurance company can't arbitrarily drop my coverage. There are 4 million small businesses around the country who are already eligible and in some cases will be receiving a 35% tax break on health care for their employees. And I've already met small businesses around the country who say, you know, because of that, I'm going to be able to provide health care for my employees. I thought it was the right thing to do. So
the CMS study from February predicted a 6.1% increase, and now post health care, 6.3%. So it seems to have bent it up.
No, as I said, Jacob, I haven't read the entire study. Maybe you have. But if what the reports are true, what they're saying is that as a consequence of us getting 30 million additional people health care, at the margins, that's going to increase our costs. We knew that. We didn't think that we were going to cover 30 million people for free, but that the long-term trend in terms of how much the average family is going to be paying for health insurance is going to be improved as a consequence of health care. And so our goal on health care is, if we can get, instead of health care costs going up 6% a year, it's going up at the level of inflation, maybe just slightly above inflation, we've made huge progress. And by the way, that is the single most important thing we could do in terms of reducing our deficit. That's why we did it. That's why it's important, and that's why we're going to implement it effectively.
Sorry, okay. And then the House Democrats running against health care, if you could comment on that.
Well, we're in a political season where every candidate out there has their own district, their own makeup, their own plan, their own message. And in an environment where we've still got 9.5% unemployment, people are going to make the best argument they can right now, and they're going to be taking polls of what their particular constituents are saying and trying to align with that oftentimes. That's how political races work.
President Obama live at the news conference, which is still ongoing, and that was Jake Tapper of ABC News getting in two questions and two follow-ups. How about that? We will continue in a minute with highlights from earlier in the news conference. The president had more to say than we heard after we came in about the Lower Manhattan Islamic Community Center situation, and a lot to say about the economy. We will play some of those highlights and talk about them with WNYC business editor Charles Herman, so stay with us. We'll be right back. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue with our coverage of President Obama's news conference, the first one since he's held since the spring. He has not been holding many news conferences this presidency. I'd like to see a comparison to even the Bush administration, which didn't hold many, but President Obama currently going before reporters. We'll play some more highlights in a minute. Just want to remind you, after we aired our interview with Daisy Kahn from the Lower Manhattan Islamic Community Center plan, you can post your reactions to that interview, as many of you have been doing, and engage in an online conversation with people on all sides of that issue on our new politics website. It's a free country. .org. It's a free country, so speak your mind. That's the idea behind the site, but it's also to encourage civil discourse among people who disagree with each other. Can you keep that real while still disagreeing? Please do. Go to itsafreecountry.org. While you're there, there's a lot of other things to do. You can answer today's news and politics quiz question, which happens to be related. How many people named Muhammad were murdered in the 9/11 attacks? How many people named Muhammad were murdered in the 9/11 attacks? See if you know the answer at itsafreecountry.org. We came into the news conference coverage in the middle of an answer by the president about the Lower Manhattan controversy. I want to play the beginning of that answer where he gave some props to President Bush.
One of the things that I most admired about President Bush was after 9/11, him being crystal clear about the fact that we were not at war with Islam. We were at war with terrorists and murderers who had perverted Islam, had stolen its banner to carry out their outrageous acts. And I was so proud of the country rallying around that idea, that notion, that we are not going to be divided by religion, we're not going to be divided by ethnicity. We are all Americans. We stand together against those who would try to do us harm. And that's what we've done over the last 9 years. And we should take great pride in that.
All right. President Obama from a few minutes ago. Joining me now is WNYC business editor Charles Herman, as this news conference has been primarily about jobs. Hey, Charlie, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. And we have some clips from earlier in the news conference. You want to start by setting one up?
Well, you know, what the president has been doing is acknowledging the fact that the economic recovery has slowed. And I think that this is something he said that he wanted to put out there right away, that you can hear him sort of outlining this issue.
Even though the economy is growing again, and we've added more than 750,000 private sector jobs this year, the hole the recession left was huge, and progress has been painfully slow. Millions of Americans are still looking for work. Millions of families are struggling to pay their bills or the mortgage. And so these proposals are meant to both accelerate job growth in the short term and strengthen the economy in the long run.
So what's interesting here is that he has been avoiding using the word stimulus. And in fact, later in the press conference, one of the reporters asked him, you know, is this stimulus? And he sort of basically acknowledged that, yes, it is. And stimulus has become a bit of a bad word on Capitol Hill after the amount of money that has been spent by Congress to try and get the economy going. A lot of Republicans and others arguing that it has not been effective. Others on the left, for example, Paul Krugman, saying that there should be even more money that put into stimulus. So I think what the president's trying to do here is really line up these series of initiatives that he thinks will actually help the economy. The question is, can they get passed? Will they have any sort of real-world impact in the short term and the long term? And the general sense is no to both of those.
These are, in effect, stimulus proposals that he's been unveiling this week, $50 billion
for
infrastructure, which of course also creates a lot of jobs, and the business R&D tax cuts.
And there's also been a proposal to provide 100% write-offs for businesses that invest in equipment and in factories and plants. But he's then went in to have a very long discussion about the tax cuts that are coming in. And one of the things that he basically, or the tax cuts that are going to expire, that one of the things he was trying to stress is that for 97% of American households that would benefit from these tax cuts being extended, these Bush tax cuts from 2001 and 2003, his argument was, well, let's just extend those. We all agree on those. Let's extend those particular ones, and we can figure out this smaller group, these people who make more than $250,000.
This is a bill that traditionally
you'd probably get 90% or 100% Republican support. But we've been playing politics for the last several months. And if the Republican leadership is prepared to get serious about doing something for families that are hurting out there, I would love to talk to them.
Now, was that in reference to the nature of the tax cuts and expiration of Bush tax cuts that he's proposing? Because I heard another part of the news conference earlier where he was very specific in saying the income tax rates would only go up for that portion of income for any couple that was over $250,000. So even the first $250,000 of anybody who makes more than that would still be taxed at the Bush tax cuts rate.
At the lower rate, exactly. And actually, that clip there, it was the president talking about the small business initiative. The small business initiative, which he was basically stressing that this is $30 billion that would go to small businesses through credits from banks and through lending facilities. And basically arguing that Republicans had been in favor of this, and now they appear not to be in favor of it. He's saying there's politics. The other question on the tax issue is that's exactly the issue there as well, that the Republicans – we all support this, he says, Democrats and Republicans. We don't agree on this one area. Let's figure that out later.
Politics? Did you say politics? The president addressed that too.
I understand there's an election coming up. But the American people didn't send us here to think about our jobs. They sent us here to think about theirs. And there are small businesses right now who are putting off plans to hire more workers because this bill is stalled. That's not the kind of leadership this country deserves.
And he went on.
The policies that we have put in place have moved us in the right direction. And the policies that the Republicans are offering right now are the exact policies that got us into this mess.
So this news conference was about economics. This news conference was about Quran burning and Islamic Cultural Center building, what it needed to be. But
there's also a lot about politics.
A lot about electoral politics in the midterm election season.
Exactly. And, you know, there's so many issues that in these next couple of weeks that are sort of on the plate to deal with before the election in November. The question is whether or not any of these proposals can actually really be approved. I think is there's a general sense that maybe one or two of these may get addressed. Maybe the small business may get approved. There probably will be some sort of consensus on the tax cut. You know, the president, as firm as he is about he doesn't want the tax cuts to be extended for the wealthiest Americans, he's made some little equivocations there that give people the sense that that may go through if it means helping all Americans.
WNYC business editor Charlie Herman, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Have a great weekend, everybody. You now have a choice. The president's news conference is still going on. You can listen to the live stream of the news conference on our website at WNYC.org, or stay tuned for Jeffrey Toobin sitting in for Leonard Lopate here on the radio. Have a great weekend.